Jam 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CJAM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
And welcome to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, Deanna Navarro will be telling us a little bit about her sickle cell work. Tell me a little bit about your work with sickle cell.
Absolutely. My name is Deanna Navarro, and I work in capacity of community health worker for the Sickle Cell Association of Texas Mark Thomas Foundation, and I also am a PR person. I assist with facilitating and making relationships with other community-based organizations and groups across the state. So that's typically what I do.
So how does the foundation typically reach out to the community?
You say, how does the foundation typically
reach out to the affected community?
Sure. Well, being based in our city's, being based in our state's capital, we're headquartered in Austin. We also have an office in the greater Houston area, San Antonio, and we aid families as well. But our stretch is pretty vast. We host a variety of programs throughout the year, and we reach out to families or to the sickle cell community by the way of providing case management, resource assistance. We do provide limited financial assistance, and so it just varies. We make it an effort, a daily effort, to increase our capacity. And we do so by partnering with other organizations and groups, civic-related organizations, institutions of higher learning, again, as a means to increase our capacity. We are a small but mighty group of individuals who work with the Sickle Cell Association of Texas. And there is far more work that we can do. And so we create partnerships in hopes of building, you know, a system of allies so that we can increase our capacity and do more work and more consistently. So
for those who might not be as familiar, how can sickle cell affect a person?
Well, sickle cell disease, for those who may not be aware, sickle cell disease is actually a group of red blood cell disorders. These are inherited. This is an inherited disorder. And so the red blood cell contains hemoglobin, which is the protein that carries the oxygen. And individuals who do not have sickle cell disease or sickle cells in their body, the healthy red blood cells are more round. They move through blood vessels with ease. They carry oxygen to various parts of the body. An individual who has sickle cell, however, that hemoglobin is misshapen. It's abnormal, which causes red blood cells to become sticky, if you will, and they resemble the shape of a C, hence the term sickle. So these sickle cells die early, which is a constant shortage of red lenses. Those blood cells get stuck, they clog the flow of blood, and this causes pain, and a long list of serious complications for individuals that is not limited to acute chest syndrome in individuals with sickle cell disease, infections, various infections, strokes, and silent strokes that happen daily. Because the blood is affected, the organs are susceptible every day. And so, obviously, there is a shortened lifespan. But when you think about sickle cell disease as it relates to the body, it affects the blood. So every organ, no organ is exempt.
I'm curious, with the host of symptoms you mentioned, is there ever a risk of misdiagnosis for sickle cell?
In fairness, I don't know. I cannot speak of anyone that I know or any talk from a hematologist of an individual who's been misdiagnosed. So I, in fairness, I can't say yay or nay. However, there are hundreds and hundreds of different types of hemoglobinopathies. And so I do have experience, or we have seen at the foundation, since trait testing is, sickle cell trait testing is a service that we're able to provide. We have seen, we've encountered individuals who have received a positive confirmation of sickle cell trait, and once they're tested, that may conflict with the information that was previous given by a doctor, but that is sickle cell trait. As far as disease, there are individuals that may have sickle cell disease, and it may not be identified as far as the specific strain, but I don't believe that the misdiagnosis is very common.
So your time with the foundation, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
Success stories. We know about the physical ramifications of the disease, but something that's not spoken about consistently or very openly is the psychosocial side that plays into having a chronic disease such as sickle cell. And one of, well, I won't say one, we have an umbrella of programs that support individuals with sickle cell disease of various age groups. And these are our camps. And so when you think about, when I consider success stories, I think about success in daily living. And our camps are the camp for our younger children, 6 to 14, is called Camp Celebration. This is a week-long camp for kids with sickle cell disease. As we earlier mentioned, individuals with sickle cell are susceptible to strokes, and some of these young people have deal with, you know, pain crises on a consistent basis. They undergo chronic transfusions. They've had a host of surgeries, and again, as we earlier mentioned as well, damage to internal organs. And so these children, some are not able to attend school on a regular basis. Some aren't as mainstream as other children. And so a success story, if I had to specify, would be individuals who are able, children who are able to have the Camp Celebration experience. These children come from across the state. Some even travel from outside the state to attend this camp, to be among children who know the life that they live. And so There's also a transition camp for young people who are 15 to 19, and these individuals are transitioning from pediatric side to adult, which comes with its own host of issues. And so this is an environment where they are set up with individuals, nurses, nursing professionals, and physicians who can talk to them about medical home placement and career counseling, higher education, mental health counseling, and such. And the same goes for our adult population. We also host a retreat. It's called the ESCAPE Retreat, an acronym for Empowering Sickle Cell Adults Through Patient Empowerment. And this is a one-of-a-kind retreat for adults with sickle cell. And it just, you know, as with our other camps, it allows an opportunity for adults with sickle cell to engage, they are offered disease management education and a variety of things that help to improve their daily living. And so a success story would be us personally, would be providing someone with an invitation and ensuring that they have the opportunity to attend one of these life-changing events. And we do receive valuable feedback from our families and also from the individuals who volunteer at our camps. And it's truly a one-of-a-kind life-changing experience. So that would have to be it.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
No problem.
In this segment of our show, Angie Fuller will be telling us about KIF-1A.
So what can you tell me about the foundation?
So we are called KIF-1A Foundation, or KIF-1A.org. And KIF-1A is a gene we all have. It creates an important protein that makes our nervous system function. And individuals who have a mutation in this gene, then their nervous system doesn't function very well. And we were established in 2017 by a parent who got the diagnosis that his daughter had a mutation. And so he has since, in the 7 years we've been created, grown our organization from one patient to now over 600 worldwide. And we are represented in over 40 countries. So KIF-1A.org is the hub for all of our community members and patients. And in that amount of time, we have also worked with researchers globally that help discover what KIF-1A is, how the protein works normally, what happens when the protein is has a variant or a mutation. And within our population, we have about 100 different ways that that mutation can present. So the phenotype or the severity can change quite a bit within our community. Sure. Some children don't live to see their first birthday, unfortunately. And then we have other milder cases that we have people, a few people in their 60s. So we have a pretty widespread. This is a neurodegenerative disease, so that means that over time it gets worse. And that is the real sad part about our disease. So we are racing against the clock to find a treatment, find a cure, and help as many patients as we can.
So with the diverse array of symptoms you mentioned, is there ever a risk of misdiagnosis?
So the risk is that patients are diagnosed symptomatically. We have a lot of patients who are incorrectly, symptomatically diagnosed with cerebral palsy. And to get the accurate diagnosis for KIF-1A genetic mutations, you actually need to have a genetic report, a genetic test that does confirm you do have a mutation in that gene.
So, I'm wondering, do you have any advice for someone out there who might be asking the question, might this be what's affecting me or my child?
Absolutely. So a number of our patients have been through the diagnostic journey. Everybody has. Because by the time you are getting genetic testing, you've already seen many specialists. So our advice would be that, whole exome sequencing or whole genome sequencing is becoming more and more available. It is the barriers to accessing that testing are becoming less, even though we still do recognize it can be costly. There are some insurances that still create a barrier to getting that done. There are many providers that simply are not even offering it to their patients. And so our recommendation is that if you don't feel like the answer you have is exactly right for your patient or your loved one, that we do recommend advocating for genetic testing for a whole exome sequencing. The KIF1A gene is not in very many panels, so if your child were to present with just the epilepsy or the seizure piece, they may want to just run a genetic test for seizures. KIF1A is in the seizure panel, but it is not in every panel. So that is why whole exome sequencing is the way most of our patients find out they have this genetic mutation.
So do you know offhand about how many people are estimated to have KIF1A?
We know we are very underrepresented. That's a great question, and it's something that we don't know, to be honest, and it's a number that we are trying to figure out how to estimate, because we know many of our patients likely haven't had the diagnosis, are misdiagnosed with a symptom-based diagnosis, and so one of our positions at the organization is really policy and advocacy work to try to lower that barrier for genetic testing.
So, in your time with the foundation, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
I think the whole organization is a success story. I think the passion of a parent to advocate for their child is something that any parent can relate to. And, our founder completely changed his career, his life, to dedicate his time and attention to learning more about his daughter's disease. And the power in that is just really remarkable. It's priceless. And so I would say the success story is that relentless pursuit of parents to find the right answer and to help their child. We are in the position we are today because a parent did just that. And so for any other community or parent that feels alone, feels like they don't have the answer, maybe has a diagnosis, but there's no community, I would say our success story is creating that community.
I'd thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Tune in every Thursday from 5 to 6 p.m. to CGEM's Top 12 Countdown. I'm your host, Taya, and every week we will be counting down CGEM's most played albums of the week. You'll hear from a variety of genres, lots of local music, and our programmers' favorite tunes. CGEM's Top 12 only plays the best of the best, so tune in every Thursday from 5 to 6 p.m. only on CGEM 99.1 FM, reaching higher ground in Windsor and in Detroit.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Deanna Navarro told us a little bit about sickle cells, and we heard about KIF1A from Angie Fuller.
In this segment of our show, Lynn Garrick will be telling us a little bit about Prader-Willi syndrome. So what can you tell me about your work with Prader-Willi?
Well, Well, I can tell you that me personally, my name is Lynn, and I'm the medical and research coordinator, so I'm a nurse. And I have been working there for a couple years, and largely in part because my youngest son has Prader-Willi syndrome. And I, maybe for people that are viewing or listening, they might not even know what that is. So do you want me to explain the elevator speech of what it is?
Yes, for those who might not be as familiar, would be helpful if you could give an
overview. I would love to do that. So it's called Prader-Willi syndrome, and it's a largely non-inherited rare genetic disorder that affects the 15th chromosome. And if people have heard of it, they might think, oh, these are the people that will eat and eat and eat until they die, which is true, because they never feel full, and so, and they always feel constant hunger. But it's so, so much more complicated than that. It really affects every organ in the body and their brain and behaviors and, appetite, hunger, body temperature, mood, release of all sorts of hormones. So it's a really complicated rare genetic disorder that involves truly a multidisciplinary approach from physicians and caregivers throughout the lifespan.
So, with all the comorbidities you mentioned, all the potential symptoms, is there ever a risk of misdiagnosis?
Well, not so much anymore, because this is a genetic disorder, right? So it's confirmed with a genetic test. So you look, you know, the geneticist will take a look, and it shows up on the 15th chromosome. So I think more often than not, it might be a missed diagnosis, because with rare disorders, even though we try to spread the word, not everyone has heard of it or knows what to look for in babies that might have Prader-Willi syndrome, so they might not be tested for it early on. I think we've done a really good job of advocating and educating people, so most of the infants that are born now with Prader-Willi syndrome are getting diagnosed within months of birth and certainly before a year. But it hasn't been uncommon years ago for people to not be diagnosed or to be diagnosed, you know, in their 30s. So we're making strides with education and getting those early diagnoses, which can really be instrumental for the kids and their development.
So in your own diagnosis journey with your family, how did you keep yourself strong and centered on the idea of we need answers and we're not going to give up hope?
That's a really good question. You know, well, at first, it was like, I'm sure many parents, or myself, I'm a single mom, but just kind of shock and disbelief and lots of tears. And after that subsided a little bit, and I collected myself from, you know, shivering in the corner, rocking back and forth, I contacted my state chapter. And just kind of wanted some information of what is this, what's happening. And then I got in contact with PWSA USA, which is our national organization. And they sent me out a bunch of information. They offered like a parent mentor, which is somebody in my home state of Minnesota that, hey, I've got a kid too, let me help you. So there's a lot of support through the national and also my local chapter. Which did give me hope, you know, that this is going to be okay, you know, take it one day at a time. We all have tough days with this and tough years, but it's going to be okay. So there was a lot of support through local and national organizations.
So that being said, in your time with the association, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
So if you're talking about the NASH, or, you know, PWSA USA, yes, we have so many successes, you know, first and foremost, and this is 20 years ago, this is the only drug that doesn't cure Prader-Willi syndrome, but helps treat it, and that was, the approval of growth hormone. So that, to date, is the only approved drug for treatment of Prader-Willi syndrome. So that's a huge win. And from there, we're doing I'm so proud of you. A lot of advocacy work in Washington, D.C. to try to help, you know, biopharmaceutical companies develop new drugs and really try to support that in the community. And we've got a lot of clinical drug trials going on, so we're really proud of that. Our family support, which helps advocate for families of all ages. So I'm super proud of our school success program, which helps families with their individual education programs, which I'm not sure if that's what you call them in Canada, but for people that have special needs, it really is tailored to meet the needs of their child. And sometimes with rare diseases and special needs, you kind of have to fight for your kids. And some people need a little help for that in crafting those IEPs to get the help that they're in, the support that their child needs in school, or for medication, or to help find physicians, or you know, other services throughout the continuum of age, I should say. Yeah.
So, if you could send any message to the community about the need to keep pushing forward in research and in advocacy, what would you say?
Wow. I would say that this is something that is so important to individuals with PWS, for families with PWS, and for just globally in general, to be a decent person, right? We need to advocate for those that can't necessarily advocate for themselves. And if you have a rare disorder, these types of disorders, they don't get a lot of press, right? This isn't something like Alzheimer's research or things that are just, you know, a lot of people have. This is rare. And these people and these families who don't necessarily have a voice or all that attention, this is really important. Really important to try to better individuals' lives. That flows into helping family lives, which flows into helping community lives. So we're so interconnected, and that's what I want people to hear, is that we really have a duty to advocate for everyone, and especially with the government agencies who kind of hold on to the money, and they can help get these new drugs developed, and they can help develop new programs which will support our children, our adults, and therefore, you know, I can go to work, so I don't have to stay home with my child. You know, I'm able to go to work because he has the services and supports that he needs, and that's through advocacy.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah.
My friends, when a child is born with a rare condition, it can be a grieving process. A parent goes from what they thought their child's life would be to a different state of mind. It does not mean that any life is without potential. It simply means we have to look at things and how they can be adapted. If you can't do something one way, try to find another. And honestly, I hear so many stories. These small, rare genetics groups, parents, families, physicians, putting their time and their hearts into better treatments and ultimately progressing towards a cure. One must never underestimate the progress that is being made. Never be afraid of moving slowly. Be afraid instead of standing still. For progress can only be made if people recognize the need in the rare disease community. Household names have their place, and they do need advocates and progress, yes, but that does not mean they are the only ones. We're facing a world that needs to be a little bit better. So working as a community, we can and should and ultimately will bring better opportunities for those affected, no matter what the condition may be. And I implore every one of you just to take it upon yourself to keep an open mind and an open heart. This has been Handy Link. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.